This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, very good Monday morning to you. Thanks for joining us at Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. NBA playoffs last yesterday. I shouldn't say last night. It felt like night. I was kind of in a fog on Sunday after working through the weekend on home projects. But Golden State eliminating Sacramento in what a fantastic, a remarkable series in which Golden State wins this one 120 to 100. They not only win this series, but Steph Curry has a game for the ages. He has a game in which he has 50 points in a must-win game for them, in which they could have packed it up and been old and a team that had its run and had been pretty dynastic and all those things, but instead took it upon himself to take that away, go on the road to Sacramento. They hadn't been a good road team all year, and beat the Kings and take down the Kings in a way that sort of solidifies his place as one of the greatest players in NBA history. He'll get LeBron James coming up in round number one of the semifinals in the Western Conference. The other matchup in the West, the Phoenix Suns and the Denver Nuggets, will play game two at Ball Arena, with the Nuggets winning on Saturday and doing it the way Denver will win if they win the championship, or at least the Western Conference. You can point to having a two-time MVP in Nikola Jokic. You can point to having a player that can pour in 35 points a night in Jamal Murray. But the main reason Denver will have success is because they have depth. In the postseason, it normally doesn't matter. But when I say depth, it's not guys coming off the bench and just giving you quality minutes. It's also guys on the floor that contribute in a ton of ways. Everybody seems to get their share when Denver plays basketball. It's not Jokic doing 40 and 15 and 10. It's not that. It is the fact that Michael Porter Jr. can hurt you. Bruce Brown can hurt you. As we mentioned, Murray and Jokic can hurt you. There's everybody on that team that can find ways to score. They did so in game one against the Phoenix Suns. A statement win? No, not yet, because we don't know how Phoenix will react to a game one loss. They bounced back, losing the opening game to the Clippers. When Kawhi Leonard was healthy and scored 38 points against them in game number one, the Phoenix Suns responded well and won that series. Now, again, Kawhi being out helped. The series without Paul George helped. But there is no question that they bounced back solidly after that game one win at home and answered the bell by winning that. Nevertheless, this is a Denver team that's tougher, and Kevin Durant acknowledged that when he said, hey, look, they're the number one seed for a reason. They are the number one seed in a way that is because they have a two-time MVP in Nikola Jokic. They have Jamal Murray. They have gone through this whole season with normal ups and downs. But we still, again, are looking at a Phoenix team that's only lost twice since Kevin Durant has been in their lineup. They were 12-1 going into this series. It's not a huge sample size, I know, but it is at least big enough to understand that they're finding things that really, really work well. So I'm looking forward to seeing that in game number two. The Miami Heat took game one against the Knicks on yesterday. I will wait to see how that series plays out in terms of Jimmy Butler's ankle. I like what Jalen Rose said yesterday, which was get him on a plane immediately to Miami. Let's play game two without him. Let's get that thing rested up and healed up and let every trainer and doctor take a look at it to make sure there's nothing major wrong with it. And if it's not, how do we get him in battle shape for game three when it does go back down to South Florida? So the NBA playoffs are going into their second round. Again, cleaning up game seven between Golden State and Sacramento. Also tonight, the Boston Bruins and the Philadelphia 76ers will play. Joel Embiid is doubtful for tonight. The 76ers have been off for over a week after sweeping Brooklyn in round one. Celtics, I wouldn't say it was overly difficult, but it was pesky. With the Atlanta Hawks, they won that thing on Thursday night in game six to advance into the second round. They are heavy favorites against Philadelphia, especially with Joel Embiid's knee injury. This is one of the older and more deeper rivalries in the NBA. It is always going to be Celtics-Lakers, but if you're looking for a 1B or a very close 2 in the rivalry setting, it's Boston and Philadelphia. So those are the matchups that we're getting right now. And I loved Golden State's win for the reason that I like when teams don't just go away, when they don't disappear, right? Golden State, while they took it to a seven game, that game six loss was so bad at home that if Sacramento had won yesterday, you'd be talking about a last dance situation. We still are, but you'd absolutely be commenting on, okay, now how do they break this up? Where does it go from here? All of that on Golden State, who've been a presence in the NBA pretty consistently outside of a couple of drop years, pretty consistently since about 2015. That's a long time to be a consistent heavy favorite or a favorite through the years. Right, in every iteration of it, it's still the big three that is at the core of this. You would be writing them off and saying, "What an era! What a time! It's now gone, etc." There's new kings in town, and things. But now you don't. Now you don't, and they match up great with the Lakers. This is a team that could find itself in the conference finals after a mediocre season. But all of the pundits who said, "Watch out, the playoffs are different," and this is my big question. Do we even care what happens in the regular season anymore? Does it even matter? The Denver Nuggets are the number one seed in the West, but they're underdogs in this series to Phoenix. Why? Because in early February, they got Kevin Durant. Golden State went into this thing as a six seed. Does it matter? No. Why? Because in a playoff series, when you play seven games and you have to adjust and they adjust and you counter to the adjustments, all of those things, it's a switch that teams sort of have in the postseason where they know what they're doing at this time of year and some other teams don't. Mike Brown is a smart coach. Mike Brown is a playoff coach. But in the end, Golden State was a better team yesterday, way better team, because they have a guy that can take over the game. De'Aaron Fox could not take over that game for Sacramento like Steph Curry could take over that game for Golden State. And they have a team in Golden State that can respond to a Game 6 loss at home with confidence enough to go on the road, a place where they don't win at all, and still pull it out. Because in crunch time, in the end, Curry's going to hit shots from all over the court. Does the regular season matter? Outside of owners generating revenue enough and maybe just some entertainment on a Tuesday in January, what is it for? How do we evaluate this? At the trade deadline, you just need one guy. If you get the one guy, it could mean everything, or it could mean nothing. Dallas Mavericks got Kyrie Irving. They're nowhere in the playoffs. They were supposed to take that next step. But still, it was changing. Right? Look at the Milwaukee Bucks. One back injury, and they're out by the Miami Heat. The regular season, it's 82 games for us to digest, but it's not 82 games for us to get worked up over. If you are a team that is going to the playoffs or going to make the playoffs, you can just get there and turn it on. We said the same thing about the Lakers. Anthony Davis is in, LeBron is out. LeBron is in, Anthony Davis is out. It's been back and forth all season long. Injuries, bad play, that's okay. When they get healthy, then they finally got healthy, played really well. Now they've run the conference semifinals going up against Golden State. They took down Memphis. So, again, these regular season baseball, we do this in baseball, but in baseball, at least before the addition of the extra wild card round, the regular season had value because you really did need a good body of work to make the playoffs. If you have a setup where 10 teams from each conference have some postseason, right, whether it's a one-game play-in tournament or a best-of-seven series where you're waiting for your opponent to come out of that play-in tournament and every spot in between, then what's the value of 82 games? What's the value of it at all? I think it allows for us to have a better conversation on the playoffs rather than thinking there's a one seed that should win throughout it all. It allows us to sort of have the idea that a New York Knicks team, for example, or a Miami Heat, which is even a better example, could emerge from the rubble and rise up. There are no favorites at this point. There are no heavy favorites at this point. Everybody's on the table. I don't care if you're Boston and now you're the number two seed. Philadelphia, without Joel Embiid, are not going to be a problem. With Joel Embiid, if somehow he gets on there, it will be. And I have no idea how Miami went from I can't hit anything during the regular season to hitting everything they're seeing in the postseason. It's all open. It's all open. Even Lakers, led by a 39-year-old player, 39-year-old player, is still on the table against a Golden State team that, you know what, looked a little old in Game 6, looked a little tired in Game 6, looked like it was all coming to an end in Game 6, but found a way in Game 7 to have their leader say, not today, no chance. And by the way, everything I throw up is going in the basket. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. We'll continue. We're going to look at the playoffs. We've got the draft. That got wrapped up over the weekend, and everybody's got grades, and we know that the final grades won't really matter until a couple of years when we look back and see all of the bright stars that came from nowhere and the stars that fell from the sky when we went, oh, my God, he'll take over the league. Oh, he didn't, and he's out in 2 years. But nevertheless, we still have some interesting developments in the draft we've got to get to. We were at that point of the season where the NHL and the NBA, the games are going to get less and less, obviously, as teams are exiting the postseason. And you get into one event in May, the one thing in May that everyone looks forward to. And what is that? Well, I'll have that for you coming up next. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call.
Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So I cleaned the garage this weekend, emptied out the entire garage on Saturday, reorganized it. I was pretty exhausted, and then I felt myself like, and I wasn't coming down. I wouldn't say I was sick, but I was really worn out. I was just like, ugh. So Sunday, I barely left the house. I had to run one errand, and I ran one errand, and I just watched the pretty much sports all day.
Was it dust?
Was it what?
Dust?
Yeah, it could have been.
From cleaning out the garage?
It could have been. I mean, it was terrible. And for those of you who are young out there, when your wife, if you know your wife has organizational ability, don't doubt her. Like, because I kept saying, our garage was a mess. We put all the Christmas boxes in there. It was all over the place. I could barely get to where I needed. I needed a flashlight once, and I was maneuvering through boxes and boxes to get to the other side of the garage where my tool chest is to get a flashlight. I said, I can't do this. I said, whenever I need something, I got to maneuver this. And I said, how are we going to make this look good? She goes, well, I have an idea. And now it's clean, it's open, it's wide open. She's got everything put away nice.
Now, did you purge anything? Or
yeah, we did. We did. You know what I noticed?
It's always a good feeling.
I noticed that there is this thriving business that's coming. It might be in my community, but I'm sure it's thriving up everywhere, of junk removal. People who are willing to come and take your stuff for a price and get rid of it for you. So you don't have to take it to the dump, or you don't have to find a special day when electronics are taken. Like, they just go, I got it. No. Like, I paid a guy $50 to come. He loaded his truck with all of our crap that we didn't want. He just piled it in there. I gave him $50. He took, now it's his problem.
Yeah.
Like, old TVs that were broken, some other stuff that was busted, electronics that were broken.
I still need to do that.
You know, like, just found them on Facebook. Nice little business.
When I lived in San Diego, we would have a garage sale. And one of the people that would always come by the garage sale, and he would just hand us a little pamphlet and said, hey, and it was like Veterans for the Blind or something like that, or, you know, some sort of like Salvation Army goodwill type of person, but, you know, not one of the main chains, I guess. And they would come and say, hey, you know, listen, you know, we're not here to buy anything, obviously, but anything that you don't sell that you just want to get rid of, just leave it on your driveway and we'll come pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was fantastic. I mean, he just left it on the driveway, and then, you know, I mean, say garage sale usually ends like around 2. by 5 o'clock, that stuff was gone.
That stuff was gone.
And I didn't have to move it back into the garage, because my theory is that if you move it out of the garage, you shouldn't go back in. Unless it's like a bike or something like that.
So I was really worn out moving everything, moving back in, sweeping the garage, cleaning it out, all that stuff. And then we did some other projects around the house and whatnot. And so Sunday, I was kind of tired Saturday. So I had a choice to make, because the Formula One race that I wanted to watch, it was on at 6 a.m. And I said, all right, do I get up at 6 a.m.? I like to watch sports live, even though I'll tape it. I like to tweet about it. I like to do something like...
You want to be in the moment.
I want to be in the moment. And I could easily wake up and just watch it and just not know what's going on. I can easily stay away from it. But I was like, no. So I said to my wife, I said, I'm going to wake up at 6 a.m. to watch this. So I got up at 6 a.m. and I went to the thing and I watched it, and it was rather boring. It was not one of the more exciting ones. So I was like, okay. I went back, took a nap. Then I woke up and I watched Knicks and Heat, and then I watched the Golden State game. By the time the Golden State game rolled around, I was up and ready to go and ready. And after that, I watched Bruins Panthers for some hockey, and I got blown away by the Bruins blowing a 3-1 lead and losing that series. So, Boston, you lose. That's awful. Like to be up 3-1 and lose two games at home, like, what are you doing to your fan base? you're just like, okay, we're going to move on, get out of this, go on to the next round. Just need one more win. They lose three straight. Then I watched two periods of the Avalanche Kraken game before my body gave out, and I was like, done. And the Kraken won that one and won that game 7. And now they're advancing. Second year in existence in the NHL. They've now advanced. So there's not going to be a President's Cup winner in the NHL, or the defending Stanley Cup champs are out. And then tonight we got Boston and Philadelphia and Denver and Phoenix tonight. So it's not my favorite time of the year, because my favorite time of the year is fall. But I do love this. I love this aspect of, a thing every night. So I love the fact that we get games and whatever it may be in the NHL and the Stanley Cup. And nevertheless, as I was saying earlier, Steph Curry had a performance. I loved it. I'm not a Golden State fan by any means, but I appreciate it when there are individual athletes who step up in the face of not only adversity on the court, meaning I'm facing a Sacramento team that is really good and really strong and young and coached well by a guy I know very well, who was on our sidelines with Steve Kerr. So I know he knows us, and I know he's giving all the information he can to his players. This is an up-and-coming basketball team that's going to be around a while, and we may be disappearing, right? This offseason, there's going to be tough decisions to be made about us, and we may be losing this core. Right, Draymond Green is likely not to be back. There's going to be a couple of other movements that this team makes to get out of the luxury tax. But they made one push last night. They made one final stand last night in this series, and that's all they needed in a game 7. At the right moment, Steph Curry had the best game in the playoffs. He had the game in the playoffs that defined where this Golden State team is right now. They are not going to go away easily. They may not win it all. In fact, I don't even like them today to win it all. I think every series that they're going to get in is going to be a fight, including the Lakers. I think they're going to have six, seven game battles all the way through. If they do end up with the trophy, it's going to be one of the hardest runs a team has ever had to get there. But when he was needed the most, he hit everything he looked at.
When I was watching that, one of the thoughts that kept going through my mind was, where is he ranked? Because we always do this, like Steph Curry,
right?
We've been doing it with LeBron for years. Is he one?
How
is
do you
he two?
Mean,
like is he? I mean, he's a surefire top 10 player all time, right?
Sure.
But is he top 5 now? Because
good point.
What
good
he's
question.
Doing?
It's really hard, because it's again, and we run into that old adage. We run into the problem of the last thing we saw is the best thing we saw. Is it safe to put him on a list with LeBron, Magic, Jordan, Bill Russell, Larry Bird?
You look at the titles, but the other thing I look at is how much he has changed the game.
He's changed the game entirely. He's changed the game entirely. That is absolutely for sure.
And that's where I think that's where he's made his biggest mark. Not the titles, not MVPs, not trophies, not this, not scoring titles or whatever it might be. It's the fact that he changed the game of how we perceive it, because prior to him, and we started getting more three-point shots, but I feel like the game now is all about three-pointers.
Yeah, it's more about the open game. That's that. It's more about spreading the floor and getting those kind of shots. It's less advantageous with big men, although it's going to be interesting with Anthony Davis in this series.
Right.
How Golden State, like when they send Green and Looney on him, how much are they going to be wanting to go small and not being as effective on the other side when Davis is in the game? Because Kerr is going to want to try to go small a number of times, but he's not going to do it if Anthony Davis is on the court. Anthony Davis isn't on the court for 48 minutes. So how much is it when he's on and off, does Kerr adjust? Because Looney had himself a great, great game yesterday. He had a great game. And this is Kevon Looney is one of the unspoken, and I hope he gets heard more. He's one of the unspoken valuable parts of what Golden State does. We know the big three and whatnot, but Klay Thompson couldn't hit the broad side of a barn last night in the first half. He couldn't hit anything. I have said this many times. I think when you are a shooter, you've got to shoot your way out of slumps, but you better be careful if it is game seven, right? If you are a shooter and you don't have it that particular day, we want you to shoot to get that rhythm and find that rhythm because you're valuable, but you could also cost your team the game if your number one goal is shooting your way out of a slump in a game in which there's no tomorrow. Klay Thompson had a big four-point play late in the second half that I thought was key, but other than that, in the first half, he was hurting Golden State. Because he was missing everything he was seeing. And I think there was a point where Steph Curry was like, I will take over this game. I will do this. I will do this. I will lead this team. He was the one that made the speech to the team on Saturday. They had a situation where they lost on Friday. And then they had a meeting. And Steph Curry, who doesn't speak a lot, he's not a vocal team leader, had spoken to the team and said, all right, this is not acceptable. What we did was not acceptable. It was embarrassing to lose at home. We controlled the series. We just had to win in a place where we win all the time, and we let that team breathe again, and now we have to go on the road, and we're not doing this. Like, he gave the speech that you want. So you're right in a way, the way he changed the game, but I don't think it's insane to put him in the top echelon of NBA greatness. I don't think it's insane to put him in the category of the seems like they're untouchable names in this sport, because again, he has changed the game, and a performance like that at what, 35 years old? I mean, he's not a spring chicken either. 20 field goals, 7 three-pointers, 50 points. Again, in a game where Klay Thompson was 4 for 19 from the floor and 2 for 10 from 3. Well done.
Is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing our look at the NBA playoffs. And then we've also got the draft that came to an end over the weekend. So the energy incitement on Thursday and all the show and all the excitement. And then Friday is rounds 2 and 3. And then it gets like more businessy.
That was totally
as the
business.
Weekend goes. And then it's all business. Then they go, hi, while you were away, here's 7 teams that made selections.
And, you know, the only thing I want them to do to kind of shore it up a little bit, shorten it up a little bit, is that it's hard to keep track because they're showing the selection down at the bottom, but they're talking about a team's previous selection up top.
Right, exactly.
Right, and it's just, I'm like, all right, who is this now? Because let's face it, I don't know the offensive guard that's picked in the 4th, 5th round.
Well, that's
no idea.
You're right. That's the dilemma that they have, because if there's a bigger name that kind of like, you know, hey, look, we know this guy, but he's a 4th round pick. They want to talk about him, right?
Yeah.
They want to talk about him, and then maybe
they'll talk about Stetson Bennett
injury or whatever. Yeah, Stetson Bennett. But then you're right. While they're doing the whole thing on Stetson Bennett, while they're doing the whole thing about he's a walk-on and he loved Georgia and he went to go play somewhere, I came back and 2 championships, right? All of that. 6 teams have made selections.
Yeah, they're just flashing names out at the bottom.
Names.
And listen, I get it. You know, you probably know a lot about Stetson Bennett. And I would recognize Stetson Bennett. But, when they're talking about, like, this defensive back from Michigan or this linebacker from TCU, I'm lost.
Yeah.
I'm
there, like, is a point where you have to, as a fan, just go, all right, I'm just going to find out.
Concentrating on my team.
Yeah, I'm just going to find out. Exactly. But yeah, then it becomes, you're right. It, like, that's why Saturdays now, the last couple of rounds, I just have it on and I'm like, eh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't dissect a defensive end from, you know, wherever.
Saturday, yeah. I had an early morning soccer game for my youngest, and then we came back home, and, you know, he needed a nap because woke up early. So I was just cleaning the kitchen, just had it on in the background.
Yeah,
just had it
do.
On, just look up every once in a while. And that's the point on Saturday, on, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 round, is when I'm just looking. I just care about my team at that point.
You care about your team, and then I get, like, I have an alert that, like, but it's not every player. It's only, like, things I may know, right?
Right, yeah.
There's always, like, somebody is making a decision on these NFL alerts, like, you know, like Stetson Bennett is a perfect example. But
right.
Like Max Duggan was a perfect example of just like, hey, here's somebody you may recognize. He got drafted in the 5th round, 4th round, 6th round, wherever, 7th round. You know, everyone else, yeah, you may not know who the defensive back is at, you know, Syracuse.
Right.
But he's gone in the 6th round to Buffalo. Whatever. But yeah, that's the brilliance of this whole process. The brilliance of this whole process was I'm on the record as saying 10 years ago, I thought it was not a good idea. I thought the Thursday night show was a little much, but I was 100% wrong, because what they've done was they're acknowledging what you care about, right? They're making it way bigger on what you care about. And what they've done is they've said, look, we get it. Interest wanes on this later, right? After a while, you just go, hey, the average fan goes, I will trust that if he's good, I'll know. And if he's not, I'll know. But I'm not going to lose sleep over who we selected in the 6th round. I will lose sleep as a fan on who we missed out in the 1st round. If my team needed a defensive end and they passed up on 3 defensive ends in the 1st round to get a guard, an offensive guard, yeah, I might go, hey, whoa, 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 what happened here, right? But in the 6th round, at that point, I may know some areas of need, but at the one point, I'm just looking for names I may recognize. And that's – so the NFL did a great job of separating and sort of toning down, as the weekend progresses, the level of interest of what this is, right? Like, just the first day – it's separate. It's a show. It's prime time. You know these players. You know your team. It's the number one pick. He's going to be the most important guy in your city. After a while, it's just filling out roster needs with younger, cheaper players. All right, so we'll get to that coming up. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. They hear that a lot at chickendinnercasino.com because they have so many winners. That's because they have so many ways to win, including slots, blackjack, poker, and more. Of course, you can step into their sports book and bet on any sports. And now is the perfect time to play with the NBA playoffs going on, Major League Baseball in full force, PGA's biggest tournaments coming up, including the PGA Championship this month. Right now, listeners of Sports Map Radio and our show get a special welcome offer. Go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports. That's chickendinnercasino.com/sports and get 50% first-time welcome bonus up to $1,000. That's right. Get a 50% welcome bonus up to $1,000 when you go to chickendinnercasino.com/sports. So what are you waiting for? Become a winner winner today at chickendinnercasino.com today. And remember to add the /sports for your special welcome offer. All right, so again, 2 games in the NBA tonight, the Nuggets and the Phoenix Suns. Nuggets took game 1 on a Saturday, and they did so again with depth. They did so with Jamal Murray. They didn't do it with Nikola Jokic. But I wouldn't be looking at this in any other way than, all right, now game 2 is about adjustments. What does Monty Williams do for adjustments? They lost game 1 against the Clippers. If they can split a 2-game set in Denver and take it back to Phoenix, tied up at 1, this then none of the concerns that you have about turnovers and all that and how solid Denver was at making tough shots in game 1, that's all going to be nullified. If Denver has a 2-0 series lead, again, a series doesn't start until the home team loses, so we'll see what happens in Arizona when they go there for games 3 and 4. It's interesting because there's going to be so much focus in the Western Conference on LeBron James and Steph Curry in the other series, right? It's going to be – and in fact, there's a huge article on it already that's talking about Golden State and the Lakers and LeBron James and Steph Curry, and these are two guys, and they met in the finals when he was with Cleveland, and now they're meeting in the playoffs. And People are kind of forgetting that this Phoenix-Denver team, this is the series between two teams that are that should have been battling for number one if Kevin Durant had been on the team from the very beginning.
And honestly, I mean, it's probably the team, you know, the winner of that team is probably moving on to the NBA Finals.
Sure.
But it's going to be the quiet series.
I wonder.
I mean, you know, we're just going to hear like, yep, they're up 2-0. Nope, they're tied 1-1.
Is it because we're so focused on Steph and LeBron that we're missing out on a two-time MVP and Kevin Durant and,
yes.
and facing Kevin Durant?
Yes.
Like, we got Nikola Jokic and Kevin Durant battling it out, but they can't get the ink because we're still LeBron-obsessed, Laker-obsessed, Steph Curry-Warriors-obsessed?
Honestly, I think it's all Denver's fault, too, because we don't know Denver.
Was it San Antonio in 2014, the last Western Conference team to win the finals other than these two teams?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking it is, right?
Yeah.
Because if you go from 2014 and you push that off to the side, that's when they beat Miami. And then you've got Golden State, Cleveland, Golden State, Golden State. Then it was like the Bucks, Toronto, the Lakers. Then you got Golden State, or was it? Am I missing on the Bucks? Bucks were a couple years ago. The Bucks were a couple years ago. So Toronto was before, then the Lakers, then the Bucks, then Golden State again. So yeah, these are the two teams. These are the last two Western Conference Finals champions in close to 10 years. So yeah, that's right. So yeah, but you've got Kevin Durant and Chris Paul. And DeAndre Ayton going up against the Nuggets and Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray and the number one seed. This should get more ink.
It should. No, I 100% agree with you, but I mean this, that's why I said, I mean, you have two of the young stars of this in the league playing against each other, and Jokic and Booker.
Right.
And we're probably not going to hear anything about them.
Well, I hope we do, because I think this is the better series. Not the better series, but I think it's the more interesting series given the level of play that they've got. We got against a team that is now the number one seed in the Western Conference. Earned it with a two-time MVP. This isn't a fluke. Against a team that went 8-0 when Kevin Durant was in their lineup during the regular season, and then 12-1 going into Game 1 against the Nuggets. Now it's 12-2, but still it was 12-1. Going into Game 1 against the Nuggets, right? So it is what you're bringing in now. That's what I was saying earlier. It's like 82 games during the regular season. It's to generate revenue to pay these guys tremendous amount of money and to give us some entertainment during the winter months and, you know, late fall and winter months. But in the end, it's virtually meaningless when we get to the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
A 7-game series is not about what you've done over 82 games. The only thing that matters is home court. The only thing that matters is seeding. Everything else is a matter of, can you adjust when you need to adjust, and can you fight off their adjustments? That's the only question. Now you could say over 82 games, you'll figure it out. Look at what's going on in the NHL. All right, the NHL had the Boston Bruins, and you and I talked about this because we're not huge hockey guys, but we acknowledged during the regular season how amazing Boston was. They won the President's Cup. Now, the President's Cup winner hardly ever wins the Stanley Cup. And there's a reason for that. Because a lot of times when you win the President's Cup, you feast on the weak. Maybe you're in a weak division. Maybe you're in a weak conference. But you play a majority of your games in one area where you just eat it up. But then in a 7-game series against a better team, they make the adjustments you can't make. You've got the pressure, again, a familiar opponent that you see every night for 2 weeks.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, so the NFL draft wrapped up over the weekend. Let's go to our Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at Progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Find drivers who switch and save with Progressive, save nearly $700 on average. Football Outsiders Mike Tenier joins us to go over the NFL draft and the winners, losers, all the stuff over these 7 rounds. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. I've almost recovered from the weekend.
What does, for a lot of fans who love the Thursday and maybe they like the Friday, but then after a while they go, I don't really know enough of these players. What does Saturday mean for you? What do you evaluate on a Saturday?
Well, in the past, at past outlets, I pick by pick analyzed every single pick. And That meant migraines. I mean, basically, you know, like I will scout, you know, 200 players. I will, you know, at least have like a good profile ready on 200 players. When I did that, I had to have like about 400 players ready. It becomes almost impossible. I think it becomes a little bit pseudoscientific late. You know, first round, second round, third round, even fourth round. You watch the guys on Saturday. You talk to them at the scouting combine. You really dug into their tape, the film, their statistics. Later on, you're best off, unless it's a quarterback, you know, unless it's like, hey, you know what? He's 320 pounds. He's started for 3 years in the Big Ten. Let's see what happens when he shows up for camp. Don't worry about his footwork or where he puts his elbows or thing like that. Just say, okay, big, strong guy. Maybe you'll help out on the line in the secondary, whatever.
All right, let's start with some teams that won the draft. A lot of people are pointing to teams like Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Arizona, some of those teams. What did you make of the Eagles, for example, getting stronger?
Well, based here out of Philadelphia, it was almost like fireworks were going off in the neighborhood. You know, every time they picked another Georgia player, another player who slipped. And, you know, there's two elements of this. The biggest one is when you go to the Super Bowl and you play until the fourth quarter where you could win that game, then you have the 10th overall pick. But you've already won.
Right.
You won the draft last year when you got an extra first-round pick and it turned out to be a top-10 pick in a trade when guys were just moving up and down the draft board. So you get that. Then you get Jalen Carter, and obviously there's a risk with Carter. But you know, the Eagles are in a unique position because they're a Super Bowl team. If they took a risk with Carter and it fails, it's like, you know, we've got Jordan Davis. Fletcher Cox is still there, et cetera. If they hit, that's the player who takes them to the Super Bowl or takes them past the Super Bowl or keeps them you know, in the playoff picture for 5 or 6 more years. You can say the same about Nolan Smith, who was kind of a workout warrior, and you don't really know what he's getting because he was only like the 4th or 5th guy in Georgia. Kelee Ringo, you can say the same thing. DeAndre Swift. Sidney Brown is a heck of a player. I really love him. You can say that about all of those guys. You win the draft when you come in without a lot of needs, and you can go out there and take care of some, you know, desires, some wants.
Who else got an A grade or close to an A grade for you this weekend?
The Steelers, you mentioned them, like up and down. It was a very Steelers bunch of players. Joey Porter Jr. is a very literally a Steelers type of player. Darnell Washington, I think, is amazing. You get Keanu Benton. I loved him. I saw him at the Senior Bowl, and I was really impressed by him. Nate Herbig, kind of the same thing there. That was a big win. I don't think I can mention the Indianapolis Colts. Like up and down the draft board for the Indianapolis Colts, they picked a bunch of guys that I had scouted, that I had spoken to, that I was really impressed by throughout the process. The other thing about the Colts, in addition to getting Anthony Richardson, so they have a potential high upside quarterback in the future there, I think they drafted like 15 guys. I'm looking right now, and the Colts drafted a bunch of guys, you know, by the 5th round, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys by the 5th round. When you're trying to rebuild, quality matters, quantity matters too. Bring more talented people in so you have more options.
Anthony Richardson, real quick, how much of a patience issue is that going to be with the Colts? How long are they going to need to develop him into what they want to see in him? It's not a plug-and-play situation, is it?
It isn't. I think he could start right away, but if they start him right away, it's going to be like, okay, run the zone read, run the RPO. You know, let's not, like, overcomplicate matters here. They should be patient for a year. I believe the Colts are patient for a year. I think, you know, Jim Irsay, the owner, knows ball, kind of knows what just happened. Chris Ballard's been there for many years. Chris Ballard was very reluctant to bring in a young quarterback after Andrew Luck retired. He was always bringing in the geezer. I think they realize now the time has come to say, this is the rebuilding year. This is the quote-unquote, you know, painful year. But you can look at the draft class, look at how the team is structured, and say, that only needs to be 1 year. That could be a team like rookie lumps this year, playoffs next year. I think that's reasonable, and I think they're patient enough to do it.
All right, who are the teams that did not impress you enough over the weekend? Who are the teams that were like, hey, you could have done a little better here?
I would say, like, the San Francisco 49ers, they go out there, and, of course, they've only got third-round picks because they, you know, they made trades along the way. There's still trades for, what's it called, Trey Lance that they worry about. They bring in a kicker in the third round. I mean, come on. You're trying to take that step from championship game to Super Bowl. I know their kicker was all Robbie Gould. You go out and you get another old kicker. That's just how you do it in the NFL. You don't draft a kicker. I think a lot of people are going to say that, but it's easy to go after San Francisco 49ers. Again, no first round, no second round pick. I look at the Washington Commanders, and, you know, I like the two cornerbacks they picked in the front, Manuel Forbes, Jartavius Martin. Are we really doing this at quarterback? You know, are the Commanders, who have a lot of talent at receiver, a lot of talent on the defensive line, going to say, Sam Howell, 6th-round pick last year, started one game at the end of the year. We're just going to toss him out there and see what happens. Is that really the plan? Commanders should have come up with something along the way, if not to get another quarterback option, then to say, let's supercharge this offensive line, let's supercharge this receiving core, whatever we have to do. So if this kid is who we're evaluating, let's make sure things are as good for him as possible.
Will Levis, were you surprised he didn't go in round one, or are you surprised that Tennessee moved up to get him? How do you evaluate the journey of Will Levis?
Nobody I talked to had Will Levis as a first-round pick. And there was a lot of talk about this on Friday. You know, there were a lot of my colleagues on the internet saying, all you silly mock drafters put him in the first round. And it's like,
yeah.
I put him in the first round because when there's rumors that, like, you know, the McNair family doesn't know what they want to do at quarterback. You know, when Irsay is like, hey, I talked to five different guys, you're stuck saying somebody out there, some owner or some general manager is going to pound the table for Will Levis. It didn't happen. I wasn't that stunned it didn't happen. It was kind of a shame that he was paraded out there like that. I was happy that the Titans went out and moved up from the second round. Again, the second round's different for a quarterback. You know, the risks are measured. You've already gotten your guy that's going to help you at another position. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't, like, reflect badly on the organization. That's a good move for them. And, again, that's a move that I would have thought the Commanders at that point, hey, go out and do that, move up. Hey, maybe the Buccaneers, go out at that point and move up, because now you're getting value for a guy. If you did it 3rd, 4th, 5th overall, you might have set your franchise back. But 35th, 36th, 37th overall, different story.
This might be a big deal, little deal, no deals thing. 43 trades in this draft. Is there a trend in the way general managers are using draft picks, the way they view the draft, or is this just one of those anomalies? They're like, yeah, you got to set a record some year.
Yeah, you have to set a record some year. A lot of them believe the analytics tenet that trading down is better. Getting another extra pick on the 3rd round, 4th round is better than, like, trying to move up and say, I got this one guy, and then, you know, the one guy gets hurt. Or he discovered the one guy, you know, has a personal problem you didn't know about. Now, when a bunch of teams are doing that, at some point somebody says, if everybody wants to trade down, I can probably get a bargain to trade up. You know, think about it. There's 10 people out there saying, take my pick. I can go to the lowest offer and trade up. And I think that's what you got a little bit with the Houston Texans saying, oh, you're willing to give us Will Anderson as well? We'll take that move. So you see different teams with different philosophies there. And really, it's interesting because if you look at next year's draft board, it's already all chaotic because a lot of teams said, hey, we'll do anything to trade down. Give us a pick next year. Give us a 4th-round pick next year. And you get all these kind of wacky back and forths as a result.
Mike Tenier again, Football Outsiders. Great stuff as always, my friend. I know it was a tough weekend. Thanks for joining us on the Monday.
Always a pleasure. Take care and enjoy the off-season.
You know it. I got you. All right, Mike Tenier, Football Outsiders. I mentioned earlier that the NFL loves to pace this stuff out, right? They give you the draft at the end of April, and then they go, oh, what's next? All right, the mandatory mini camp, right? All right, whatever, until you get to training camp. But they have that one date in May that they've circled on the calendar to remind you that, yep, the schedule now is going to be released on May 11th. So that's coming up in like 10 days. It'll be here. And the schedule release is one of the wildest things that you'll see in sports, because you know who you're going to play. You know where you're going to play that game. But there are other things about the schedule that you don't know. Will that game be on a Monday night? Where exactly on the schedule will be that game? How do we open the season? How do we close the season? Do we play 3 or 4 on the road, for example? Do we have 3 or 4 at home? What is, again, primetime games? When will be our Thursday night game? How many Monday night games do we have? And people love this. They love schedule release day. It is a blast. And that's going to be coming up in a couple of days. The NFL really knows its product. They know that, again, that the Super Bowl can end in mid-February, and in a blink of an eye, we go to the combine. And in a blink of an eye after that, we're talking about the draft. And then in a blink of an eye after that, we've got schedule release, and before you know it, we are going to mandatory mini camps, and then eventually training camp, and the season will start. Take your product and space it out as much as you can. It's got the shortest season of the major professional sports, but it definitely is in the news all the time and for stuff that's big. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Tony D, Ron Culver coming up in hour number 2. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb, and more from the draft, and of course, NBA and NHL playoffs. So we continue.